Today's episode of the worst financial podcast in the history of the world is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up and donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast on Patreon. I appreciate the shit out of you guys. I'm going to shout out some of my patrons. I'm going to give you the two rules for the podcast, and then we're going to get going. I got a lot of shit I got to say today. I got to get some things off my chest. Going to say it once and for all on the podcast. Get it over and done with. Logged into, as my dear friend would say, the annals of history, ladies and gentlemen. Stop me if you've heard that one before. Today's dose of incredibly unpopular opinions is brought to you by my friends over at The Trader's Path. The Trader's Path is a brand new day trading service that was started by my brother, Pete Hedgedus, who used to be a member of other day trading services until he realized they all sucked ass. He didn't like them. He didn't like the people that were running them. He didn't like how they were running their operations. He thought he was being screwed, front run, the whole nine yards. So Pete said, I'm going to start the Trader's Path, which is a no bullshit trading service for people just like me that don't want to get screwed and actually want to build a community of day traders where we can talk during the day and all lose money together so we can commiserate with one another. That's not true. Of course, the goal is always to make money with Pete. And Pete offers a bunch of great tools if you're a day trader on a daily basis. So if you sign up for the Trader's Path, you get daily watch list. You're going to get a reminder in the morning of what Pete and his team are looking at. You're going to get a live chat that goes all day. You're going to get a live stream that goes all day. You're going to get investor education. You're going to get their ideas for trading in green markets, trading in red markets, trading options, trading stocks. It is a wealth of ideas, and it's a nice little community. And you know what else? The guy that runs it, he's not a dickhead. I know that because I talk to him. So go support my friend Pete over at The Trader's Path. The link is in the podcast description. And right now, if you're one of these people that has a full-time job and you just trade on the side, Pete and The Trader's Path are offering a business person special, as we say here at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. The businessman special. He's going to lop off $100 off of his regular service, which is specially geared for people that don't want to sit in front of the computer and trade all day. It's a service for people that trade more on the part-time because they have a day job. So if that interests you, check out my brother Pete over at The Trader's Path. If you're also looking for a great tool to have in your arsenal, if you're a day trader or you watch the markets, my brothers over at the Sanglucci Steam Room have a couple of things that may scratch you right where you itch, folks. First and foremost, they offer something called the Sanglucci Steam Room. This is a live daily chat room that focuses only on big money coming into the options market. Following that kind of steam in the options market can oftentimes help you predict what is going to happen in the equity market. Equity market is a fucking fancy-ass term for stock market. Just in case you guys are that new to the financial world, we don't want to leave you behind, folks. We want to carry you in the dragnet with us. My friends over at the Sanglucci Steam Room, they point out these moves on a daily basis. They have been doing it for years. I've known these guys for about 7 years. They understand what they're talking about. I love doing podcasts with them. They're friends of mine. They're good people to do business with. They're trustworthy. They're honest, just like my homeboy Pete. I love shouting out these guys because I know they're not dickheads. So that is a huge plus. Not only that, but Sanglucci is offering the 3LT playbook, which is the three rules he used to become a seven-figure trader, and his Sanglucci Investing Master Course. All of these items available through my podcast description on Podbean. So head on over there and check out some of those links. This podcast is also brought to you by my friends at Rumorhound. You want to talk about a tool that is being used that nobody in the industry is doing anything like it? Rumorhound has it, right? Pete is going to bring you a community. Sanglucci is going to specialize in options. My friends at Rumorhound specialize only in mergers and acquisition rumors. There were a bunch of them just on Friday of last week. There was a Kraft Heinz one that came out. What does Rumorhound do? It looks at these rumors. It looks at the financial viability of these companies. It looks at the potential source of the rumor. It uses a proprietary artificial intelligence-based algorithm to take all of these variables, put them together, and then try to spit out a nice recommendation to you as to whether or not an M&A rumor is something you should be paying attention to or something you may want to avoid. As we all know, money can be made on mergers and acquisitions, folks, in the stock market. There's no better feeling than waking up and learning a position that you have just got bought out. And it's many, many reasons why people buy stocks to begin with, because they think a company is undervalued. Obviously, people that may be potential acquirers would also think a company is undervalued, so maybe somebody come in, scoop up the whole company instead of buying 10 shares like you do, you degenerate. This podcast also, so listen, check out Rumorhound. They're also in the podcast description. Check out my sponsors. Tell them I sent you, please. Need to keep them happy and keep the rent paid. This podcast is also brought to you by my dear friends at Corvus Gold, who have been supporting me for almost 2 years now. Actually, 1 year by my count. Hello, I can't do math. My friend Monero, Jay Mintzmyer, Russ Valenti, Nicholas Parks, Nathan Michaud, Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, Crichton Titus. You guys know the motherfucking names. Say them with me. Finally, some patrons that have been with me for a while, and then we're going to get started. Wallaby390 and Glenn Tongue, thank you. Grant Garden and Justin Roberts, I appreciate you. The Storyteller, BTF and Brian Holloway, Scott Corsi, my friend Brian Hall, Raymond Vadinas, thank you so much for continuing to support me. And finally, once I get the goddamn thing to work, which I can't do, I've been doing this podcast for 2 years and have no clue what I'm doing. Some of the people that are recent patrons that have signed up recently, Lawrence Lepard, David Warden, Dylan, Rob Sitting, and Marco Vitti, David Hansen, Giancarlo De Lely, Bob Tankle, John Weber, and George Rosansky, Egg Nasty. Thank you guys so much all for signing up. Please, if you enjoy the podcast, we'd love to have you as a patron. Two rules before I get started screaming furiously into this microphone. The first is this podcast has a two-drink minimum. It's the weekend. I'm not worried about you guys fulfilling the two-drink minimum. I'm sure many of you probably have already. Finally, this podcast is not investment advice. It's not life advice. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't hold any licenses. I don't hold any registrations. I don't even wear fucking suits. I've never set foot in an Edward Jones office. I've never advocated buying the SPY ETF. I hate Jim Cramer. I hate CNBC. Ta-da! There it is, folks. I don't know what to tell you, except for don't take my advice. All right, let's get started. Well, if you were just looking at the stock market over the last couple of weeks, you would think everything is fucking fine and dandy. Why is that, folks? Because the stock market has gone to and eclipsed all-time highs several times here over the last couple of weeks. And lo and behold, you would never know that the world's second largest economy is on full-on lockdown. Not, hey, we're shutting down a couple of factories here, there, and the other thing. Not, oh, there's some political unrest in China. Not, oh, there's a slight, you know, global economic bump in the road. Like, the whole fucking country is shut down. Now, obviously, I don't live in China, and I haven't been to China to do any reporting, but I have read probably more articles than the average individual on this coronavirus that's been going around. And what I have to say is a couple of things. The first is Wuhan, which is the center of where this coronavirus outbreak happened, is completely empty. Not only do you see all these dystopian images on Twitter of people being fucking dragged out of their homes and thrown into police cars because they're suspected of having the coronavirus, and you see all this other whack shit like body bags just, you know, being delivered to and from hospitals, all these crazy images on social media. People been telling me, hey, Chris, you gotta stop being fooled by the fakes on social media. It's like, all right, listen, even if 5% of the videos that I've seen on social media over the last 3 weeks regarding this coronavirus are real, even if 5% of them are real, it is a horrifying dystopian image that is coming out of China. And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, but the measures that China is taking, to me personally, don't seem congruent with what we're being told in terms of the intensity and the reach of this virus so far. So what we've been told is that the death total, today is February 8th, 2020, that the death total as of right now is approaching, I believe, 750. So according to the Johns Hopkins official counter, is it Johns Hopkins? Johns Hopkins. I always want to say Johns Hopkins. And then sometimes I say Johns Hopkins. And I just don't know which. It's always Johns Hopkins. Jesus. Rename the fucking university, please. We're having a lot of trouble pronouncing it over here. I know that's been like the university name for probably like 225 years, named after several Johns Hopkinses who probably left, a 30-ducat endowment in the year 1622. But I'm going to need you to go ahead and rename the university. All right. Their official coronavirus tracker says 34,963 confirmed cases, 725 total deaths, and 2,394 total recovered. Here's the deal. Here's the first issue that I'm going to raise. You know, what the country has been doing in terms of quarantining 16, 17, 18 major cities and several tens of millions of people. I think that's upwards of 50 million people. To me, for some reason, just doesn't seem to match these numbers. Now, look, I'm not a statistician and I'm not a biologist, obviously. I'm not a virologist and I'm not an expert here. You know, what I do with news items is what I do with finance, which is just try to apply common sense. To me, something doesn't make sense about that. Why would you shut down the entire country, essentially, if there's only 34,963 total confirmed cases? Now, I'm looking at the confirmed cases chart on the right side of the Johns Hopkins page here. And if you just do a search for coronavirus 2019 global cases by Johns Hopkins CSSE, you can find this tracker online. And the chart of confirmed cases shows the line going up, what appears to be staying on a relatively consistent trajectory. Doesn't look as if it's going to go as parabolic as previously guessed, but still an alarming trend. That's not showing any signs of tapering, at least from the data that's available here. So when I turn on social media and I'm looking at things like doctors freaking out and saying that they don't have enough supplies and that the hospital is full, and then you see these other videos of people in hospitals moaning and groaning, people being carried out of buildings in body bags, them driving down ostensibly a highway in Wuhan with five giant trucks spraying what appears to be, they look like these giant snowmakers that you have when you go skiing. You know, those big snowmakers they turn on. It looks like they have five of these on the backs of five 18-wheeler trucks. And they're driving across two lanes of traffic in one direction, just spraying this stuff basically in the air. And we've seen the videos of kids and citizens walking around with, you know, these big giant plastic shields over their heads and people getting disinfected coming off of airplanes. The response continues to kind of keep me on edge and keep me carefully watching the story. You know, first it was, oh, it's just the elderly and infants that are dying. You know, this last week, one of the doctors who was a whistleblower who first came out and identified the coronavirus to people, I think in late December, early January, and warned about it, who was subsequently told to shut the fuck up by the Chinese government, and they made him sign something saying that he would be, you know, prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law if he didn't shut his mouth about it. That guy has unfortunately passed away. You want to talk about a hero living in China, putting it all on the line to try and warn people about what was coming. That man has unfortunately lost his life, but did you see the way that was reported this week? I don't know how carefully you watch the news, but if you go back this week and you look at the original reports of that whistleblower dying, by the way, I believe he was in his 30s. If you go back and read the initial reports, the Global Times had put a tweet out about it and said that he had passed away, which was then retweeted by a number of people, myself included, saying, this doctor's obviously a hero. And a couple of hours later, when I go back and I look at my Twitter timeline, that tweet, the original Global Times tweet, had been deleted. And then all of a sudden, we get a couple of headlines, and even CNN went so far as to say that he had passed away. Then we get a couple of headlines out of China that say, wait a second, he hasn't passed away. He's actually just moved to another hospital. No problem. Common mistake, right? He's not dead. He's just somewhere else. Even CNN went as far as to correct their original tweet about it with a subtweet saying, hey, other news now is out of China. The doctor apparently is alive, etc., etc. Well, then we find out a couple hours later, we do get an official narrative out of China. The doctor is dead. What the fuck is going on here, folks? What's going on? You know, I've said before, I said in a piece that I wrote a couple of days ago about why I'm looking at the fatality rate outside of China, that I'm not an expert in geopolitics, but having spent 5 years, 6 years working with Chinese nationals, focusing on companies that are based in China that were listed on U.S. exchanges, I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what the ethos is coming out of China and the Chinese government. And it's a lot of it is about optics. You know, I think the Chinese would rather have a major disaster in their country and have it look okay to the rest of the world than have something that looks ugly but is less of a disaster. I think a lot of it is about optics, personally. I think that's very important to them. So when I came out after this news started hitting the wire a couple weeks ago about the virus, and I said, man, probably best to look at these numbers with a little bit of skepticism, that's part of the reason. And I think that that skepticism still is important. Now, am I saying turn around and tell the WHO and the CDC to go fuck themselves? Not what I'm saying. Am I saying that the Chinese government is definitely faking the numbers? Not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, just like with anything else, it is valuable to keep a skeptical eye on things. That's it. I'm not coming out of left field with any kind of crazy conspiracy theory right now, at least at this moment. What I'm saying is that we should take the information that we're given with a grain of salt. Take it, but take it with a grain of salt. That's all I'm saying. Why do I say that? I'm not jumping out and telling everybody, hey, you should definitely question the official narrative. What I'm saying is that in the past, not only have people been misled about things, said this on George Gammon's podcast the other day, you know, sure, 95% of conspiracy theories probably aren't true, but 5% of them do wind up being true. They wind up turning into conspiracy fact. So it's bullshit to say that all conspiracy theories aren't worth paying attention to. You want to take them in. Look at the evidence objectively. And before you say, hey, this is bullshit, at least try to listen to what somebody's saying about it, right? Now, I'm not claiming, again, any conspiracy theory here out of left field. All I'm saying is, not only have governments around the world misled people about, you name it, a multitude of things, but there have also been cases where respective governments around the world in a large group of different situations and circumstances have thought either they had something under control or they had something correct when they didn't. I mean, that happens. You know why? Because the government is just made of normal people. These people don't have fucking superpowers. They're just regular people like you, like me, people listening to the podcast. Open your front door, the people walking around, the guy at Wawa buying a coffee right now. The government's just made up of people. It's not like the government has some selective Men in Black style program where they bring you in for, you know, testing and you got to get a retinal scan and you have to have an IQ of 220. I used to think that was the case. When I was a little bit younger, I thought, hey, the government wants the best and the brightest all the time. And I just realized, these people are just kind of like regular people, you know? I said on the George Gammon podcast, the first time I heard George W. Bush speak, I was like, this guy doesn't seem fucking smart. Maybe it's me, you know? And I said to my mother, what's the deal? Don't you have to be the smartest person in the world to be the president? Because you're pretty much leader of the free world. And she was like, no, you don't. And you'll find out as you go through life that that's the case. So it's not that I don't have faith in the government. It's not that I don't have faith in the people that make up the government, because a lot of them are great American citizens, not unlike the family I grew up in, where my parents both worked for the government. My dad worked for the post office. My mother worked for the local library. Two finer individuals you will not meet. But we've all had those experiences, like I said in my gold presentation in May of 2018, where we experience gross incompetence from the government. Gross incompetence. I mean, come on. The DMV, the VA, the post office, the government is big and it is comprised of regular people. So to just keep your wits about you, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's part of the case that I make against central banking. I mean, obviously, I believe it to be a Ponzi scheme. And the central bank fallacy is held up by the idea that we have some type of definitive certainty that the path we are on right now, which we all know is unprecedented, is the path that is going to lead us to perpetual prosperity forever. We got a system now where inflation is normal. We can print money whenever we need it. And this is it. This is the way economics are supposed to work. We've figured it out. We've solved the economic puzzle here over the last 30, 40 years. That's what we think. We think we have the answer and things can never go wrong. And obviously, I like to call that bluff because I think it's nonsense and bullshit. And I take a lot of the same points I'm making now and I apply it to that, which is these central bankers are just people. Jerome Powell doesn't have superpowers. Janet Yellen didn't have superpowers. Ben Bernanke sure as fuck didn't have superpowers. He couldn't see the 2008 subprime crisis and it was standing right in front of him giving him the fucking middle finger. Ben Bernanke just touring through neighborhoods with houses being foreclosed on. Going, the subprime crisis probably contained. We don't really forecast a recession here. The guy couldn't find his way out of a fucking paper bag. Then he writes a book. Like he did something. Like he won 5 NBA championships. I don't think so, Ben. So the point is that everybody, me, you, the people listening, the people that work in the private sector, and the people in the government, we all have our faults, we all have our Achilles heels, and we all get things wrong. It's like when you work on a school project, you know, and you got a group of like 5 people, and somebody writes part of the paper for you. Do you hand it in without double-checking their work? I mean, well, if you're lazy like I was, yes, you do. So just ignore that. The point is you want to double-check the work. You want to be skeptical of the work. You want to make sure that everything that you're turning in that's got your name on it meets your standards, meets whatever the burden of proof is that you need to be convinced that what you're hearing is the objective truth or close to the objective truth or is factual. And everybody's burden is different. Some people go by exactly what they're told and they don't question anything. Other people don't believe anything regardless of how much evidence there is. And everybody else kind of fits somewhere in between. You know, if it's a civil case, it's preponderance of the evidence. If it's a criminal case, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. Everybody has their own burden of proof that needs to be met somewhere. All I'm saying is keep your wits about you and stay sharp. Now, moving on from the coronavirus itself and the growing number of cases and deaths associated with the coronavirus, moving on from that, let's talk about the stock market and existential threats and black swan events and gold and why I like to buy gold and why I like to own gold. Now, first of all, the fact that the stock market has gone up through all-time highs while China, one of the largest economies in the world, has basically shut down, tells you everything you need to know about the rigged system that the market plays in. That right there tells you everything. What is that telling you? Well, it's telling you that fundamentals don't matter. It's like Tesla. The stock price is skyrocketing, but really, you know, the fundamentals, the financial fundamentals of the business aren't improving. The way that things used to work with markets before central banks took them over and decided to make the points not matter, like they said on Whose Line Is It Anyway, the way things used to work with markets is that the market would move, and it would move in accordance with the underlying fundamentals of whatever the market was. So if you're looking at the stock market, the performance of the companies within an index, maybe they're earnings power, their earnings growth, the cash that they generate, whether their balance sheets are shored up or not, those types of things would help dictate the price of a company's equity. But what has happened is the central banks have created an environment where they have convinced the world that risk no longer exists. This is probably one of the most dangerous things we could possibly do. The world has been convinced has been fooled, has been conned over the last 10, 11, 12 years that risk is no longer a thing. And if you need proof of that, the only thing you need to know is that the market continually goes up now in the absence of fundamentals, right? So the second largest economy in the world has essentially shut down here due to this coronavirus. And yet the stock market doesn't really seem to give a shit. Now, why is it? Is it because people are saying, wow, this virus is going to pass and it's not a big deal? It's not. It's because central banks have injected so much liquidity into markets and are so convinced that they're going to be able to stop any type of downturn that they have convinced people that this is also possible, which then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where people get conditioned to believe that they can buy every single dip regardless of the issue and that they're always going to be rewarded for it. Folks, that is fucking scary. That is the kind of attitude that will bury an economy eventually, in my opinion. You cannot convince people and fool people and trick people into thinking that risk doesn't exist when it does. And all you need to know about this, as I said on one of my Periscopes, I said on George Gammon's podcast, is a couple of days into the coronavirus problem, you had people on CNBC like Wilfred Frost talking about, is this going to be the time that China is going to inject liquidity into its markets, that China is going to stimulate its economy, that the U.S. is going to offer aid to stimulate its economy? Can we cut interest rates to fight the virus? This shows you how disconnected from reality these people are. What is the problem? The problem is a real fundamental problem, right? It's a virus. It's something that's happening on a biological level. It's a real event taking place in real life. It's not a number on a screen. It's a real problem. It's a real threat. When Foxconn shuts down its factories, those factories are shut down regardless of how much money the Chinese government prints. Now, if productivity and earnings mattered, that would mean something, but it doesn't. But there's no printing solution to actual fundamental problems. And we have gotten so convinced that we have the answer to all of these problems and we can do it all with this, as Ben Bernanke said, amazing technology called a printing press. What an asshole. We have an amazing technology called a printing press. That's who we're dealing with. See what I mean, folks, when I say people in government might not be the smartest all the time and don't have superpowers? We have fooled ourselves into thinking that we can print the solution to any problem. And we're starting to conflate real-world problems with equity markets, right? The problem used to be people would separate the economy from the stock market. You've heard that expression, right? Don't confuse the economy with the stock market. They're two different things. The problem is everybody's confusing the economy with the stock market. Now you're confusing real world, real life, tangible problems where people are dying, cities are shut down, with the markets. I mean, I put out a joke tweet a couple of months ago saying something like, oh, the coronavirus has killed off mankind, yet a lone server sits in the basement of the New York Fed bidding the Dow Jones up to 50,000 in record highs. What's the point of the markets going higher when humanity is in the midst of austerity and a real crisis? I'm not saying that's going to be the case this time, but I'm saying that the thinking that we have adopted here with this coronavirus, that we're going to be able to print the solution to it no matter what it is exceptionally dangerous. It's exceptionally dangerous because the fact, you know, that it doesn't even have to apply to economics, just in nature. You know, things fall apart sometimes. That's just how it goes. That's just how it goes. You hit speed bumps, you hit road bumps, things fall apart. Markets should go up, markets should go down. Your quality of life will go up, your quality of life will go down. You know, the human race, not unlike the economy itself, which is, you know, trillions of little transactions all happening every single second. But the human race is going to flourish and it's going to do terribly. And it's going to do everything in between. It's a dynamic entity. We don't always have to be on the forefront, on the edge, on the frontier of having everything be the best that it's ever been at all times, all the time, because there's something very unnatural about that. Not unlike the way there's something very unnatural about the stock market staying at all-time highs and making new all-time highs all the time. And the sacrifices that we make to try to keep ourselves on that frontier, in that pole position, with the market in that spot. The sacrifices, the bridges that we're burning in the background, and the fundamentals and the nature of things that we are laying waste to after adopting this mindset are conditioning us to believe that an existential threat is not possible, and that is just not the case. It's not the case. Famously, over the last couple of days, I've been talking on several podcasts and continue to bring up something Ron Paul said to me at one point, which is he believes that markets will ultimately be the decider and not central banks. Central banks may be winning the short-term game here, but at some point, the market takes over. And at some point, nature will take over too. Stepping outside of the realm of capital markets, nature is going to do what it wants to do. And there's nothing that we're going to be able to do to stop it. And whether it's, I'm not just talking about, you know, epidemics and potential pandemics. I'm talking about all the other disasters that are possible. Natural disasters, talking about man-made disasters. You know, unfortunately, going forward, there are going to be aberrations. We might be living in a society and in a world right now where things are the most peaceful that they've been. And there's been the least amount of volatility possible, but it's just not natural for that to occur in perpetuity. And to think that that's a possibility, I think, is a little bit shallow-minded. I know a lot of the Democrats think that's a possibility, but we're always going to run into problems. We don't know what they're going to be. We don't know when they're going to happen. And we can't predict them. It's impossible to. We have a planet with 6 billion people on it, all doing different things at different times. So there is a significant amount of randomness that occurs. And as I was saying last week, talking about this coronavirus problem to some people, it's one of those things where you go to bed one night and everything's fine, and you wake up the next morning and things have gone horribly wrong, and the attitude has changed and sentiment has changed, and it's happened like that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the coronavirus. Though, do I think there's a possibility that our attitude about this virus may change over time and sharply at some point? Yeah, I think that's a possibility. But it doesn't have to be that. It can be anything. I mean, a great example that I always bring up is 9/11. You know, I remember the way that I felt prior to 9/11. And I remember the way that I felt the morning of 9/11. And this is, you can make a similar comparison about the 2008 financial crisis. You know, it wasn't really a problem until we woke up one morning and it was a fucking problem. And then all of a sudden we realized, man, if AIG goes, the whole thing's fucked. So we got to do something. We have to take decisive action. Something's got to happen. And all of a sudden, everybody that was euphoric and didn't want to think about the potential consequences of something terrible happening, all of those people woke up that one morning with a different attitude, saying, wow, we got a major problem here. This could be the big one. Similar to that was 9/11. I remember the morning of 9/11 happening. I was in college and I slept through my physics class. I woke up when my roommate came home at about 9:30 in the morning, and we had Fox News on, but I was sleeping. And I woke up at about 9:30, and I remember just turning over in my bed. We had one of those little VCR TV combos and looking at the images of one of the towers burning. And I was like, Brett, what the fuck is this? And he's like, dude, you didn't hear about this? He's like, you know, they just sent everybody home from class. Explained to me what was going on. You know, sat up in bed, watched some coverage for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Learned that there was, you know, a couple more planes that they thought were unaccounted for. And I left my residence hall and walked over to the student union where they were showing everything on a big screen. People kind of gathered together to have breakfast, sit and watch the news together. And people were crying. And But on my walk over there, I remember a couple of fighter jets going overhead. And they were really low. It was really loud. And I had never experienced anything like that before in my life. You know, there was a feeling of insecurity that I had that day that I didn't have the day before. And everybody had that on 9/11. A lot of us did. I mean, I talk a lot about 9/11 and, you know, a new investigation and all these things. Forget about that. Just focus on that feeling of insecurity that you had. Because for me, that day waking up, I was like, this is different. I felt like the world had changed regardless of what happened. We went from not a care in the world to we're at war. And it's those types of major sea changes that can occur quickly and without warning. And so the more that central banks condition us to believe that those changes aren't possible, the worse they're going to be when they happen. What we should be doing is conditioning ourselves, not just as investors, but also as human beings, to realize that sometimes bad things do happen. And it's exceptionally unfortunate, but it's the way of the world. And it's the way of nature. And by realizing that, and by being able to make preparations for those things without everybody telling you that you're some conspiracy theorist imbecile, which is another thing I'll touch on in a second, the more prepared we'll be to deal with those things. In practice, in real life, physically, mentally, psychologically, we'll be on our toes. We'll be ready to roll. Now, going back to what I just said about, you know, preparing for things. People giving me shit, joking about me online, whatever, last week because I said, look, I'm going out and I'm buying ammo and I'm making sure that I have supplies and the things that I need. Because it's not a problem until it's a problem. I saw a video yesterday of people in Singapore lining up to buy supplies because a couple more cases have happened in Singapore than had happened a week prior. Now I'm looking at the Johns Hopkins map and I see there's 33 cases in Singapore and the country has gone out and run out of supplies. I mean, we know Wuhan ran out of supplies, right? Now, Singapore, there's lines around the block according to videos I've seen on social media. Now, the day before that happened, do you think those people were worried about it? No, but something happened. Psychology changed, the seriousness of the matter changed overnight, and then all of a sudden everybody wanted to be prepared. You know, being prepared is about having things in place before you need them, not rushing all at once to make sure you have your preparations in place after you need them. So I kindly tell people to fuck off when they give me shit about saying, hey, you know what? You can go out and you can prepare for these things, just like you can prepare for a number of major existential threats. And again, not saying this is going to be an existential threat, but saying there's nothing wrong with being prepared. You know what I lose if this thing goes away? Nothing. I lose nothing. I got a couple extra cases of garbanzo beans in the basement and some extra ammunition and a couple of masks. Am I out anything? No. We're just going to make a lot of fucking hummus. That's it. We're going shooting and we're eating hummus. And here I brought enough hummus for everybody at the range. Hummus and ammunition on me today. Everybody at the range gets a snack and everybody with 9mm guns, they all get free ammo today. It's free ammo day for my friends at the range. That's the worst case scenario. Why do I like to own gold? Great question. Glad you asked me. I like to own gold because there's two ways out of this mess. And by this mess, I mean not only the coronavirus thing, but also the central banking thing, right? In our lifetime, you know, one of two things is going to happen, right? Either we will be all consumed by an existential threat that will bring the economic system and the central banking model to its knees, or we're going to have modern monetary theory and we are going to continue to be able to print and print and print. And maybe that existential threat as it relates to hyperinflation or the dollar crashing doesn't happen in our lifetime, right? It's bound to happen. I think it's a mathematical, you know, guarantee that it happens. But let's say it doesn't happen in the next 50 years, next 100 years. Well, why own gold? Great question. The first is gold protects against the system falling apart. Gold, as I said in my May 2018 presentation on Case Learning, which you can find on YouTube, just look for the guy with the big red pimple in the middle of his forehead who drank four Moscow mules before 10 a.m. that morning. That was a good one. I like that speech. But as I said, you can own gold to short the whole system. You can't even short equities anymore because equities aren't based on any kind of fundamentals. They're like widgets that exist in nowhere land. They do whatever they want. The rules of physics and the rules of economics, they don't apply to them. They just do whatever, whenever. That's pretty much equity analysis for you right there. Which is why people that are great at not looking at fundamentals, like certain asset managers whose names will remain nameless that own stocks like Netflix and Tesla, those people are making more fucking money than they know what to do with. Isn't that great? Isn't it great when you understand exactly why the whole thing is fucked up and the system doesn't work and you gotta watch somebody with an IQ of a fucking can of tennis balls make money and then brag about it on Twitter? That's a great feeling, isn't it? But I'm betting on the long-term scenario. Because if there is an existential threat is what I'm trying to say. Gold is going to appreciate. It's a safe haven. People all of a sudden, you know, you get laughed at now when you say gold's been an economic instrument for thousands of years. Nice pet rock, asshole. You know, it doesn't pay a dividend. Oh. How quickly the attitudes will change overnight, folks. In the midst of an economic crisis or any type of existential threat, that attitude will very quickly become, buy gold. It's been an economic instrument for thousands of years. That becomes the argument for owning it, not for not owning it. You know, while everybody scrambles to try to buy it and you're already holding it, sipping a nice cool lemonade, watching people piss themselves. That'll be a fun day. Just sitting there watching the end of the world, drinking whiskey with your loaded gun. Me and you sitting together at the end of the world. That'd be a good date idea, wouldn't it? Like the end of Rogue One. You know, they kind of embrace on the beach and then everybody dies. But the point of the matter is, in an existential crisis, gold will appreciate significantly. And all the douchebags that give you all this shit about it doesn't pay a yield. It's like, look, dickface, hold on to your fucking 2% yield that you're getting from Johnson & Johnson stock, all right? You can have as many shares of Johnson & Johnson as you want when the U.S. experiences ridiculous hyperinflation and the central banking model starts to fail. And confidence fails in central banks. That's when you're going to want to own gold. So you can make your wisecracks now. That's all right. I like them. I enjoy listening to it. I like knowing that I'm the counterparty to these other people that are arrogant enough to suggest that we have all the answers. I like being that counterparty. I like being... It's like when you go to the craps table and there's a bunch of obnoxious dickheads and they're being impolite to the dealer and they're hooting and hollering and they're accosting the waitresses and, you know, they got their $20 life savings on the pass line. There's never a table in my life that I like rolling up to and just laying as much as possible on whatever the point is. You know, I mean, making a lay bet. So hoping that they lose, looking for a seven out. Those are the people I like to play the don't pass line against, you know? Whoop it up, hoot and holler, and keep being dickheads. Because when you lose, I'm going to win. And I'm not going to gloat, and I'm not going to talk shit. I'm going to take my money, and I'm going to smile, and I'm just going to fucking fade into the distance. And it's going to be the same situation here when gold inevitably appreciates. Why do I say inevitably, Chris? Great question, me. Because if things work out the way that people think that they're going to, if modern monetary theory takes place, one of these fucking socialists wins, Who knows? Or we just continue down the path of unlimited QE right now, where we are hooked on printing money, supporting the markets, using money printing to counter any type of possible existential threat. Did I mention, by the way, that there's no fucking way that's going to work? But let's just say we stay on that path. And let's just say we continue to print. Hey, the price of gold as measured in dollars is only going to do one thing. It's only going to go up. So if you're interested in preserving the wealth that you have, it's a great way to do that. Because there's only a finite supply of gold worldwide. So unlike money, you can't print more of it. You want to know what happens to an asset that you can't print more of? Pull up a non-inflation adjusted chart of gold since the 1970s. $35 an ounce to $1,600 an ounce. Thank you very much. You want to talk about stupid nonsense technical analysis and charting? There's a fucking chart you should look at over the last 40 years. That's a trend that I don't think is going to break. You want to take a look at another technical trend? Go look at a technical chart of the purchasing power of the dollar over the same course of time. Gold retains its value. So even if the system fucking pans out the way that these central bankers think that it's going to, the way that people on CNBC think it's going to, the way that your financial advisor thinks it's going to at Ameriprise Financial or wherever. By the way, I'm not a financial advisor. Just wanted to say that. Even if it pans out the way that people think it's supposed to, and the buy and hold is, you know, that's the winning argument, they're going to destroy the purchasing power of the currency. And gold is going to go up. So you can own it to bet with modern monetary theory. You can own it to bet with QE, or you can own it to bet against it and to bet essentially as a hedge against an existential crisis. It's the everything asset. It really is. So the next time you're watching CNBC and you hear somebody talk some shit about gold bugs or people that own gold, raise your glass of whiskey and give them the finger. I mean, I do it all the time here, so it's not like I'm speaking at a school and I don't know what I'm talking about. The president's task force on the coronavirus held a press conference on Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern to discuss a bunch of nonsense. I watched the whole thing. They just giant word salad of don't worry, everything's going to be okay. They didn't even cover it on CNBC. As a matter of fact, I went downstairs and turned on the TV onto CNBC because I figured it would be a no-brainer that they would cover it. They've been doing a special on the coronavirus outbreak now every day. And certainly it's the number one news headline that is affecting the markets. Why wouldn't you have a press conference by the president's task force on the coronavirus televised? Why wouldn't you do that? I don't know. If I owned a TV station, I would make sure that was on. Turn on CNBC about 5 minutes after 2. I had already gotten some text alerts that the thing had started. 5 minutes after 2, I got Steve Leisman on there talking about central banking. Thank you very much, folks. That tells you everything you need to know. Steve Leisman's head on my 70-inch television. Not good. Folks, you gotta take everything with a grain of salt. You have to take everything with a healthy dose of skepticism. Okay? And the frightening thing is that it appears that people that do take things with a healthy dose of skepticism, whether it's the news that we're fed, whether it's their take on financial markets, are increasingly becoming silenced. And I think that is a threat. And I think that it's something that we should pay attention to. You ever hear the age-old expression of, I don't fucking know. Look, the point is, try to stay skeptical. Try to keep your wits about you. And question everything. Mighty Mighty Boss Tones a long time ago had a song called Question the Answers. I like that. But certainly it's not natural what stocks are doing now. So think about it. Why does it happen? What is going on in the underlying world? Whether it's companies, their earnings power, existential threats, all these things, versus what are we seeing in the markets? And do you think those things will eventually converge? They have certainly diverged. Do you think that they'll eventually converge again? I would argue that it is in the nature of things that they do. And mathematically, it has to happen. So I'll make my bets, and you can make yours. Don't listen to anything that I say. Do your research elsewhere. Think for yourself. And have a shot of whiskey on me. That's it. I'm out of here, fools. Peace!